Before we begin this episode of Film Sack, which we're super stoked and soaked to do, I would like to remind you that Nerdtacular tickets are on sale for 2014's event in July here in beautiful Snowbird, Utah. It's actually Salt Lake City, Utah, and right up at the Snowbird Resort. Sunny, warm, awesome time of year. And you are welcome to come. Go to nerdtacular.com, get tickets now. The Double Clicks are performing. All your favorite Frog Pants stars are there, including the entire Film Sack team doing our regular Film Sack live episode, which we love doing there each and every year. Please come, bring your friends, bring your family, bring your kids. Everyone's welcome. Tickets now at nerdtacular.com.
This is a big deal, Charles. This is a big find. I can't believe it's just sitting here. All these centuries just waiting for lucky us.
I raise Houston. They're getting the old man. So come on, Cameron, share the glory. I guess we'll just have to get another team in here.
All right. Let me grab my bag.
Stop eating my sesame cake! This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 197. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined tonight by Brian Breaka, camera 3000. What? I didn't finish that one. Dunaway. I don't know what that was. Oh, I know what it was. Breaka, camera 3000 miles away. Have it short out in the control room. Dunaway.
Grab it.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Brian.
Hello.
Aloha, Randy.
Aloha.
How you doing?
He's improvising. I forgot. All right, keep going.
All right. So I've decided to take on a pet project this week, specifically to teach my cat how to sign language. And that's the reason why it's a pet project. And so I'm going to just give you a little taste of what he's got here. So he's going to sign a little bit, and of course it's going to be translated into some kind of audio language that I have no idea what it's going to sound like, but it's going to be something like
kitty, pretty.
And so I mean, oh, you're a very pretty kitty. Yes, you need like affirmation. Very good kitty, pretty. And so then I'm pretty sure he's going to tell me he's going to crap in my shoe. Uh-huh. And and then I'm going to have to kill him.
Okay, great.
My scrote. And, right, yes. My scrote.
Well, there's more. Is there any more?
No, that was it.
Okay. Live at the Improv, Brian Dunaway, everybody.
Right.
Also with us, Randy. Stop eating my sesame cake, Jordan.
Yeah. Aloha, Scott. Brian. This week, I am so proud to be greeting you in my normal speaking voice. I considered, believe me, I considered the fake computer-generated Amy voice for this, and I realized I can do better than that. I'll demonstrate. Check this out. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
This movie sucks.
Very good.
Yeah, it does. Finally, Brian, Amy, quit poking the lizard a bit.
Hi there. Yes, this is the University Primate Office. Yes, we actually have one position open, and there are only two qualifications. First, you have to be willing to work with primates, giving them painting materials, letting them play Castle Wolfenstein, and assisting them in using a very high-tech sign language to audible command converter. Second, and most importantly, you have to have a Jufro.
The Nebbish guy liked him. Rudy.
Don't you make fun of Steve Gutenberg, who wasn't even in this movie.
When you can't afford Steve Gutenberg, you got problems.
Yeah, hire that guy. Nicely done. And that was Doom, by the way, not Wolfenstein, but that's all right. Anyone can make that mistake. It was something I noticed very specifically in the movie. It was one of those 90s tropes. Let's put a video game in our movie. And they did a fine job of that. What movie might you ask? Well, it's Congo, and Scott Fletcher has the deets.
Congo. Eight people go on an expedition into the Congo, an expanse of Africa where the laws of nature have gone berserk. When the thrill seekers, some with ulterior motives, stumble across a race of killer apes, they must fight their way out of the dark.
That is so much better than what happened, though.
Wow. No kidding.
Isn't it? It was just a bunch of elderly monkeys who were pissed.
Could we just have Scott Fletcher describe a better movie for the next hour?
That'd be great. Our second Michael Crichton joint, Congo, a movie based on a book, which, again, I've heard nothing but great things about the book. People like that book. Is it true, Randy? You've read them all.
The book is good.
Yeah. So tell me the differences here. Was there a pet monkey and was the guy from Nip Tuck bringing it around with him or what?
It's a book that reminds you when you see the movie of how much better your brain is at imagining cool things than people are of actually putting them on display. Mm. You know, so like I hate to jump way ahead, but this book proposes that in the very, very, very near future, guns are going to go all computerized and automated.
Oh.
And goes to great lengths to describe how these guns are going to work and how you could take them out in the jungle. And if you get attacked by creatures, these guns could come to life and find and track and shoot and be really accurate and really safe and so forth.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, in Michael Crichton style, that, you know, nothing is really safe, right?
Sure.
But in your mind, you come up with this great idea of what that looks like and how that works and sounds. And in the movie, you're just like, no, no.
Well, they didn't pull it out till the end. She pulled out that dumb laser. And I know they talked about it.
Apparently, they've been carrying this across the African jungle. All of, like, no.
Yeah.
Right. You see Bruce Campbell using the first like minute of the movie, and you know that it's going to be used again as a weapon, even though it's not intended, but it's just going to show you how nice this diamond is.
Yeah, that thing was obvious. It also just struck me as, having not read the book, and now that you say this, Randy, it's actually kind of enlightened me a little bit. Nobody has been good at doing this, not even Frank Marshall, who helped produce most of Spielberg's movies, who directed this pile of turd. Mm. Not Spielberg, but Marshall. He can't even do what his buddy does when he produces for him, which is to take a Crichton novel or any real source material and take it to places where your imagination is truly tested. In other words, you know, Jurassic Park worked really well, not just because there was great stuff on the page from Crichton, but because Spielberg's really good at realizing it and pushing the boundaries and finding new technology to do the special effects justice and all these kinds of things. And with a few missteps like and freaking the Unix system thing that Brian Dunaway loves so much in that movie. aside from a few things like that where they misstep, you know, much more realized vision here, right? I mean, or in the Spielberg movie and in Timeline and in Congo, no such vision.
Yeah.
It's just not there.
The real vision for going from a novel to a movie is seeing what you've got to leave out, what you've got to eviscerate and move past, so you can really focus on the most important points. And this is a movie that tries to pack in a bunch of little stuff that's ultimately irrelevant, you know, such as like, such as when they arrive and they have the thing with Delroy Lindo.
Yeah.
Does not advance any part of the story. Except they shoehorn in finding out a little bit more about Homolka in there.
Yeah. Well, at least his accent was okay compared to everybody else's fake accents.
But, completely useless. Why did they do that? They just wanted to have this scene and keep these characters that didn't need to be in the movie.
Yeah.
And you can say that about things again and again and again to the point where you're like, wow, there really didn't need to be a movie. There's so many irrelevant things that trip it up.
I got a question for you. Can you guys hear this? Could you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
Totally.
No problem. Super loud.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No,
good.
It's fine.
I just had to test that because there was a problem with audio earlier, and I just realized if I got to clips and they wouldn't be heard, it would be the stupidest segment of the show. So I used the monkey burp to test it. Anyways, nice. Yes, all of these things that you say are true. I just feel like once again, real opportunity, completely lost, dashed against the rocks with a cast of 1,000 dudes. Everybody you know is showing up in this movie, and it was the smallest part. Exactly. Joey Pants shows up in this thing.
Right.
For no reason.
Just driving across the airport.
Totally could have been left on the cutting room floor.
For no reason except to show that you could act in this movie. You didn't have to be totally shitty. You could have actually pulled it off. He was great. His very brief, small, nothing role at least had Joey Pants acting. Laura Linney, who's always cross-eyed anyway, but
and frantic.
She's good in some things. I thought she was great in The Truman Show. She's good in other things, but she is terrible in this.
Yeah.
Terrible. and everyone around her is bad. Bruce Campbell is on par with everyone else, and that should tell you what I'm trying to explain here. Because I love Bruce Campbell, but not because he's a great actor, you know?
But, like, Laura Linney has such a horribly written character to play. Like, early on in the film, she's back at home, and her boss, played by Joe Don Baker, who is always good.
He's great.
Even when he's playing a horrible, horrible person, like in this movie.
Yeah.
Her boss starts yelling at her for no reason. Now, the way they wrote her character is totally wrong. Like, they could have made it so much more interesting. Like, if he's yelling at her and, like, she'd pulled a fire extinguisher off the side and started just spritzing him and telling him to shut the fuck up. Sorry. I just, like...
Great. Now I got to find two of them.
I'm sorry. But I'm just like, I this character of hers is just not right. It's not written well. And so I feel like we've got to forgive her. We got to forgive everybody. Like, the only character that was written fun is Ernie Hudson's character.
No, yeah. I agree. But even, did he have to have a British accent? I don't even care if I don't know anything about the book. And again, we're not, you know, this is about movies, not books. But I don't know if that character is supposed to be English in the book. But what are you doing? Like,
the whole movie, Ernie Hudson was trying to impersonate James Bond.
It was bad. It was bad. And my daughter was watching part of the movie and she goes, who is that? And I said, you need to guess. Tell me who you think that is. And we know what's coming, of course, as far as her memory of him. And she says, yeah, I know what it is, except the voice is wrong. I said, yeah, the voice is really, really wrong. Like, it's bad. I mean, I was trying to explain to her that intrinsically his voice is wrong. And she finally figured it out. She goes, oh, and this is kind of bad. But she goes, oh, it's the Black Ghostbuster. I said, yeah, I guess.
Pinkman. Yeah.
Now, right. See, I actually would have said that I thought Ernie Hudson's accent was better than anybody else's, better than Tim Curry's, better than...
Oh, Tim Curry's accent was...
It was atrocious.
Off the hook.
That was bad. You know what? Switch those two guys around. Give him the... Well, I guess you can make a good Armenian. I don't know. But that voice... All the voices. What was the point? You didn't need to make all this fakery. Delroy Lindo could do it. He pulled his off. He was fine. Everybody else failed miserably. And I don't think Ghostbuster did much better than anybody else. It was bad. Like, his was bad in a Kevin Costner Robin Hood kind of way.
Oh, I wouldn't even go that far.
You don't think that? I think it was just about as bad as that.
It was like a Jeffrey Holder accent from, speaking of James Bond, from Live and Let Die.
Hold on, Jeffrey Holder, help me.
Cola Nut.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Maybe in that range. And I like him, right? That's
my favorite line out of James Bond, by the way, was cold and nut.
I have my, do you want to know? Well, I have to say for the clips, I have a favorite line from this movie. And it was him saying it. It was about lava and why is there lava in this room? And that's all I'll say till we get to it. It's my favorite line in the entire thing. Anyway.
Again, man, this movie, there's so many things that it tries to explain that it doesn't need to. And then there's so many things that desperately need an explanation and the movie's ignoring them. And the whole lava thing is where I just have such a problem.
Yeah.
Like, okay, all right, I'm going to suspend disbelief and go with you that it's possible to put lava on a trigger. I don't exactly get it, but let's go there. At least give me a reason. Give me something. How is this lava on a trigger?
Yeah.
Lava tubes.
Yeah. Well, and they, you know... They didn't have the effects prowess then to do this. And in fact, Frank Marshall had said in the trivia talks about how he wanted or had intended to use computer work stuff that was pioneered on Jurassic Park 2 years previous for the gorillas. He wanted to go full, you know, Mighty Joe Young, which happened much later, but he wanted to get that kind of effect. And he said they couldn't do it because at the time, this stuff was not capable of reproducing hair in a realistic or believable way. I could totally see that, but I felt like all the effects suffered from we don't have enough money to push it any further than this, and they're not really up to snuff for the budget we have, so let's go ahead and have that lava look like a jelly donut getting squeezed. Let's go ahead and do that, and let's have the monkey. Let's have people in monkey suits. Let's go ahead and pull that off. And they had.
I actually thought the people in monkey suits wasn't as bad as it could have been.
You watched a different movie then.
No, I don't think it's as bad. As it could have been. It could have been much worse.
That's true.
I agree with Brian Dunaway. I was actually pleasantly surprised. They were obviously fake. They're right. Like, first glance, you're like, why is that gorilla's hair so clean? But but even after that, you start watching them for a while and go, yeah, okay, all right, we're all right.
Some this of the facial animatronics and stuff, they were okay. The eyes blinking and the mouths having curves to them and stuff. That stuff kind of worked, but
I like their nod to Peter Elliott, who is the guy that he's the character name, but it's also a nod to the guy who's doing the monkeys.
Yeah, he Peter, choreographed them, right?
Yeah, the Peter Elliott. Yeah,
yeah, right. Yeah. I first read that, I saw it. Bruce Campbell auditioned for the role of Peter Elliott. And, oh, that's cool. And they gave him a crap role instead. And instead it went to Charles Travis from Nip Tuck, and he got it. And then I thought, well, oh, this must be, you know, if they say it's based on something, it's based on a real researcher out in the Congo with real apes hanging out with what's her name? Who's the lady who's always doing the apes?
What's her name? Oh, yeah.
Jane Goodall. Weaver.
Jane Goodall, yeah.
Jane Goodall, yeah. Maybe they're buddies or something. And then I read on, no, he just choreographed the fake apes. That's all it was.
Fake ape.
Fake ape. And so, yeah, Bruce Campbell went for a much bigger role and got a tiny one and got killed in like 4 minutes.
Which he's probably grateful for at this point.
This is true. You know that big diamond they were throwing around up there in the plane?
Right, right.
According to the trivia, now this is the internet, folks, so...
Speaking of the balloon.
Take it for what it's worth, but the diamond that was thrown out of the balloon at the end of the movie was supposedly an actual diamond and was a special uncut sort of big, fat, you know, find it in a cave kind of weird, rare diamond, and they just borrowed it for filming, got some kind of rental fee or something. They lost it in that scene completely, never found it again, and was not being able to... They couldn't return it to Herkimer Diamond Mines.
Can I call BS on that?
Yes, because I think it's probably garbage.
Yeah,
why wouldn't they
film that in front of on a soundstage with a backdrop? Like, okay, so they're getting all these people into a hot air balloon, zooming in on them from what, another hot air balloon or a helicopter or something?
Well, you haven't seen Tim Curry in a while, have you?
I was thinking Ernie Hudson had a nice sweet Porsche that next year.
Yeah, somebody stole that thing.
You guys don't seem to have any movie roles lately. I wonder. Laura Linney working her ass off.
We filmed that in a hot air balloon. We had a guy on the ground that was going to catch it.
Yeah, and it fell in a crack in the dirt where the lava tubes were, and we never saw it again.
So Ernie Hudson, Tim Curry, they're off on some island somewhere living it up is what we're thinking.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But according to other sources, though, the there is some truth to the idea that they were lent this diamond and that it was a real one. Now, I if that's true, let's say it's all true that they lent it and this whole losing it thing is all crap. It's all entirely possible. I mean, today we were told that Newman had died, but Newman had not died. It was a big, giant, fat hoax. So you can't believe internet hoaxes are the worst. So let's say that that's all true. Why wouldn't they just use like a cubic zirconia or a piece of glass?
Right, exactly. There's so much wrong with that. It's like the trivia speaks to the same level of believability that all the stuff that actually happened fictionally in the film.
Well said.
Speak to.
Exactly. Well said. It's not like there's a guy in the audience going, that appears to be a 14,000-year-old diamond there in his hand. And then not have a problem with that laser gun slicing monkeys in half.
Right.
Yeah, but you got to admit, you can say what you want to about the believability of the laser monkey shots, but that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Scott Fletcher sent this in, by the way.
Oh, no. The bad apes have the crystal lasers.
Yeah. Just not a line in the film, just his commentary watching it. Anyway,
it was kind of my commentary watching it, although there was more F-bombing.
Yeah, that's in your version. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Frank Marshall is, I thought it'd be interesting to kind of look at what other things he's done. So he's a big, big deal when it comes to producer in the world of movies, like gigantic deal. I will give you just a couple of examples. The entirety of the Raiders of the Lost Ark series, the Sixth Sense, Back to the Future series, let's see, Bourne Legacy, Bourne Identity, all the Bourne movies.
As producer, though, right?
Producer. All these are all producer credits. Okay. I'm scrolling down and probably missing some here, but let's see. The Best of Roger Rabbit. Originally Roger Rabbit. Some TV stuff like the Tiny Toon stuff, which say what you want about them, they were a huge hit. A bunch of cartoon stuff that's on now. Cape Fear, Back to the Future, Anacrophobia, Gremlins 1 and 2, The Goonies. Like the guy, and then pretty much anything that Spielberg's ever done, including the Amazing Stories, like all this stuff. Battery's not included, for heaven's sakes. He's the dude. Emperor of the Sun by Steven Spielberg. Like, huge deal. Go to his directorial stuff.
Oh, it's horrible.
Here's where things start to smell
it's
real
two
bad.
Two movies, really.
Yeah, let's see here. We got the two that matter are Anacrophobia and a Congo. I guess that's it.
Right.
Because the rest of this is all just crap. The making of Poltergeist, the making of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, like it's just weird.
Wasn't Alive, wasn't it, were they, that soccer team crashed and they ate each other?
Hold on, yes. I liked that movie.
Yeah.
I actually liked that movie. Am I supposed to not like that? Am I supposed to hate
it? I like it. I thought it was all right.
I remember coming out. I don't know why I didn't see it, but I did.
You can never go wrong with cannibalism. I mean, let's just face it.
I remember it being really hard-hitting and seemed really realistic. And I remember the memory I have the most from it from 93 when that came out was that when the bodies, they had lined up the bodies in the snow so that they were kind of...
buffet style?
Yeah, kind of. Like they were kind of lined up buffet style. So when they would come out and eat, they would slice a big chunk of meat off the ass of a dude. It was always a butt.
The rump roast is the best part.
Yeah. It's all the fat.
You don't have to pick around any bones or anything. It's sure, just, right? You know, it's just right there for you.
Yeah, but
it's
the rump. We're not eating hot dogs.
Yeah.
Or it.
So, yeah. Anyway, if you would have told me this yesterday that he's the same director, I would have thought, well, that's too bad because I kind of liked that. I thought this is not good. This is not that. This is bad. This is real bad.
Mm-hmm. It was really bad. It was almost like it was on autopilot at times, like he wasn't around and it was trying to direct itself.
Yeah.
Like I felt more than once like people who were acting had no idea what to do.
You did feel that kind of we want to be Jurassic Park vibe though, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? The thing is, Jurassic Park wasn't really that good.
Shut up.
Oh.
Special effects.
We're going to have words. Effects. No, movie. The whole thing is better than you are now giving it credit for.
No, I went and watched this stuff last year in the 3D.
Oh, you saw the re-release the thing?
Right. And I mean, okay, I still enjoy the movie. But is it like, does it knock them dead with the acting? No.
I disagree. I think that movie is great on pretty much every level it needs to be.
It's fun.
Yes, but it's also completely, and it's what I would, it is as close to what I like to refer to as a perfect movie as possible. And I don't mean the best movie. I just mean the kind of movie you can see over and over again. It never really gets boring or tiresome. It's Back to the Future. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You know, the first thing I judge movies on is how the music makes me feel, and Jurassic Park will never fade.
An incredible soundtrack. Yeah. I think John Williams' best score, probably. I've said that before.
Possibly.
It's just amazing. Now, does it lose some of its luster when they have these terrible sequels and all that? In comparison, anyway, probably. But
yep.
I'm all for a fifth one. I'm not, or and fourth.
Everything,
fourth?
But just talking about the first Jurassic Park movie, like, I almost wish we could go in and remove some things that aren't aging well, like anything having to do with computers.
Yeah, that's true. That stuff's no good. Like, you mean when Newman's yelling at a pre-recorded QuickTime video? That one? That one's great. You guys, what are you? You can't leave without me. We're leaving in the next 10 minutes. I'm like, no, the little play button's pushed and you can see the thing go.
I've already left.
Yeah, long gone, you dummy. Yeah, all that stuff was just, you're right. But if you can accept that, then it's awesome. It's one of the great movies. It just is.
It was blown away because of we no one had thought about, hey, you know what? Let's perfectly blend this idea of science and, you know, an adventure and let's bring back dinosaurs. I mean, it was such a big idea and it was executed so well.
Sure.
As far as the special effects were concerned, and the action hit just at the right spots, and you had all these actors that had these big personalities.
That's the point. Yes. Everything you've said is why I think this movie is
good.
Yes. I think that's what makes
but
it good.
If you dissect the story and go, was this groundbreaking? No. Was the acting that great? No, not really. Was it a little bit over the top? Yeah.
Yeah. Those things are all true. But the pacing is so good. Everything feels right. Nothing feels too drawn out. Like it just feels good. And the other thing I want to say about it. I was 23 when I saw that movie in the movie theater with my wife, and we'd only been married a month or something, or whatever it was. Maybe we saw it right before we got married, in fact. Anyway, we see the movie, and I remember thinking then, and I still feel it now, I was relieved that a movie could still take a hold of my imagination in that kind of way, because I felt like it hadn't happened for a very long time before that. I feel like I hadn't had that since Star Wars when I was a kid, or maybe Back to the Future, or some of these other movies we keep talking about. And I always just chalk that up to, well, you were a kid, And these things feel good because you're a kid. And that's, you know, there are people who grew up with Congo who think it's the greatest thing ever. We've heard from them on Twitter who've said
Have we really?
Oh, yeah. My favorite movie growing up, kid, people have said. Please be kind to it. Well, of course it was their favorite movie because as a kid. So I knew at 23 that that was part of why I loved those old experiences. But I remember seeing Jurassic Park and walking out going, nope, it is actually possible to do this again. And I'm in my 20s now, you know? Right. And I remember thinking that was the greatest thing ever. And I still feel that way about that movie. So I probably hold it a little more special because of that. So I'm a little biased in that regard, but because nobody else is really doing this now. The Matrix came close to that same kind of sense for me. And that would have been 99. So, you know, I was nearly 30. And then what's another good example? I can't think of another one. Like there are so few that do this to me.
I feel this way all the time. So I don't want to like run roughshod all over your memories, but like I remember for years and years as the Lord of the Rings movies were coming out, just like feeling like
that's true.
This is the new normal. Yeah. And of course it's not, but you can indulge in the wonder of movies, at pretty much any time. There's always something out there.
I completely agree.
Last summer, everybody I know was so happy with Pacific Rim, and it was such a shallow movie, but it gave them so much joy.
Everyone you know but me. I hated it. I wanted that movie to be one of those. It just wasn't. And maybe it's a certain, you need the certain touch of a certain director or a certain something. Spielberg is probably as big as he is and you know, as far reaching as he is because he's that guy for so many people. So I'm
going to say Spielberg ain't as big as Del Toro, if you know what I mean.
Well,
I think our problem right now is just this glut of just big fantasy and sci-fi movies that, I mean, they all have these big budgets and they're all doing, it's hard to find one that just stands out with you. Like Pacific Rim.
In
a different landscape, it would probably be, best movie ever.
They all follow the same formula, and because they're all coming out in the same summer, that formula starts to become very apparent, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess maybe in some small way, Gravity is this movie now. It's a movie that's showing us something we haven't seen before and doing it in ways we've never thought possible in films.
When you start to think about it, there's always something.
Yeah.
Just the last few years, I have felt that way by what's his name, Christopher Nolan, over and over and over.
I felt that way with Inception. I should have mentioned that. That's another movie where I felt
the Dark Knight. Like he's just got a way of pressing my buttons. Don't expect everybody else to feel the same way.
His new deal called?
It's a one word. It's the space one, the NASA one, right?
Do we know anything beyond that trailer? Because that trailer doesn't tell you anything.
No, it's you can't tell even if it's a documentary or a real a fictional piece.
It's called Interstellar, right?
And after seeing Dallas Buyers Club, I went and watched that trailer again, and I expected to see what's his name from My So-Called Life in drag somewhere.
So it's not at all a documentary. It stars Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway and Jessica Chastain, and it's going to be like serious sci-fi apparently.
I'm so in.
But you can tell they just got started. Yeah. They haven't, actually filmed stuff to show you yet.
Yeah, they're being so cheeky, and they were this way leading up to Inception. I remember that feeling of like, what are we doing here? Like, I wasn't sure what he had in store for anybody.
Yeah.
And they're doing that again, and there are hints of this is all after some terrible calamity, and someone's figured out how to get into space again and get us the hell out of here. That's just the sense I get. Because everyone's so dirty and they're driving the worst looking truck I've ever seen. And yet he used to be an astronaut. Like, what's going on? Where are we? What time is this? I feel like this is some post-apocalyptic deal. If that's all true, I'm so in.
The thing I always wonder is, are there people right now seeing movies where I'm like, that's good, but not great, who are thinking of it as great, great, and are going to be having this discussion 15 years from now? Like, so for example, when you go see the Lego movie, or here's a better one, The Avengers.
Sure.
Right? You're like, wow, this is a really good movie. Like maybe my favorite movie in months. But you don't come away thinking about it in the same vein as Jurassic Park, right?
No, I don't think so.
I think there's a whole generation of people who are.
We'll all think real fondly of it. But it is, it does come down to age. I was talking to a group of 7-year-olds today who were talking about Star Wars.
How are you guys doing? Doing good?
Yeah, you guys all right?
You enjoying that McRib?
Checking in on the 7-year-olds. And they were all saying, they were talking about Star Wars, and they all love Star Wars. You know, Star Wars is such a ubiquitous cross-generational thing. But they were all really stoked for the 2015 movie, and they all know that it's coming, and they've heard about it and everything, which surprised me a little that they were all that knowledgeable about it. But that is going to be their 8-year-old in the line itself.
Right, yeah. Their experience there, yeah.
And then it got me to thinking, dude, Lucas, you are a diabolical bastard, and now Disney, you know this. Every so often, you bring a new generation in at 8 years old, and you indoctrinate the hell out of them into lightsabers and freaking land speeders. And they're there for life. They'll never not like Star Wars. It's kind of insane. Yeah. Is there anything else like that anywhere?
And it happens every few years, right? Where like 5 years ago, it was WALL-E. It was coming. Everybody was like, okay, I'll go see it, but I'm not going to have huge expectations. One of the best movies of all time.
I love that movie.
Five years before that, Batman Begins, right? Oh, they're doing Batman again? All right, well, I'll go see it, but I'm not going to have huge expectations. Amazing movie. Yeah. And I keep saying, like keep your expectations low, because this might actually be good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm down with that. If it's every other, the prequels were the other, so now we got the every, and let's do it right this time, you dummies. Congo's movie.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about Congo again?
I didn't like seeing the Nip Tuck guy the whole time, because I have a very specific tone when I see him. Because I think Nip Tuck is the
sleazy.
Yes. And he's the nicer of the two.
Right.
Like, he's the guy that kind of is okay in that scenario. But if you've seen Nip Tuck at all, everyone on that show, I think this is the reason I couldn't watch it all the way through. And I know, Brian, you and I have talked about this, but
yeah.
Everyone's a dick in that show. Everyone. Yeah. Except maybe the nurse lady. She's okay. She's nice. I can't think of her name.
Right. The one that
that assisted
had cancer.
Them.
She was a lesbian.
Yes. Her. Yeah. She seemed nice all the time. But everyone else is a giant dick.
You're supposed to like, oh, I hate that one plastic surgeon, but I like his buddy. No, they're both dicks one time or another.
Yeah, sometime or another.
Exactly. And it's convenient that when one of them's being a real dick, the other one has to kind of balance it out to be less of a dick. So you're like, right this time.
Yeah,
right.
Good dick, bad dick is a better name for Nip Tuck.
Good dick, bad dick.
Because in the end, I don't like them. I don't like TV shows where I don't like anybody. Like Breaking Bad, there's a lot of people who are terrible in that thing, and everyone's got kind of weaknesses and problems. But there's a weird humanity to some of those people.
Everybody likes Jesse.
Yeah, but in the case, people even liked, there were times it was a little hard to, but people liked Walter at other times.
Yeah.
Because, you kind of get where he's coming from. You see his motivation or whatever. You go to this thing, you go to Nip Tuck, and you just go, I hate you all. I hate everybody. And you're not doing anything remotely redemptive at all. You're all terrible people.
Ex-wife is a dick. I mean, yeah, everybody's
a dick. They're awful. Nobody's...
That kid was a dick.
Oh, the kid was the biggest. That's about time I checked out when that became... He was a bigger part of the story. And I was like, all right, I'm out. This is it.
Right.
So in this case... The reason I even bring this up is it's just hard for me to see him and go, because I never saw Congo. I think most of us hadn't seen this, right?
Oh, I saw it back in the day and I enjoyed it, and I still enjoy it. I think it's got a lot of good action that kind of pulls you along, even though you don't want to. You're sitting there 1 minute going, so stupid, but then all of a sudden you're like, ooh, yes, please hurry, shoot those flares out there before you get hit by the rocket, and I'm actually sucked in for just a second.
That was actually kind of cool.
Right. If they had more of that and less monkeys in the jungle, I think it's been a lot better movie. And Dylan Walsh, by the way, reminded me of Tim Robbins for some reason during that part. He just kind of had that Tim Robbins feel.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Dylan Walsh. I
couldn't. The Nip Tuck guy.
Oh, I thought he had a different name. All right, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he reminded me more of Steve Guttenberg the entire time. But
right.
I didn't remember any of the movie except one little thing. I saw it when it was like the first weekend it opened in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And I did not remember anything. It's been that long. I've lost everything except this one thing. And I remember thinking it was amazing when I saw it however many years ago. And then this viewing, I was so disappointed to realize what it is. And that is the Balinese monkey chant that the locals do when they think that what's his name is dead.
Yeah.
And of course, he actually is nearly dead, mostly dead.
Which level of dead is he? I'm just closing my eyes.
He's got one last scream in him, is how I like to put it.
Right.
Yeah.
But but Bali is 6,900 miles away from Congo. What is this Balinese monkey chant doing in this spot? And now I'm so jaded and cynical that I'm just watching this going, come on, guys. Yeah. you could do better. And when I was younger, I thought it was so magical and beautiful.
Can you do that with flare guns, by the way? Is that a technologically possible thing? Would they draw enough heat-seeking?
Oh, no way.
To attract a heat-seeking missile?
It doesn't seem like it.
So dumb.
But this is the second time we've seen a flare gun used to some effect. What was the movie we saw where he got shot in the chest and then blown apart? Was that? It was the new Arnie movie.
Stand, yeah.
This was such a trope. I hate this trope. Hate this trope. Of non-badass people doing something badass. Mm. And you could just see, like, they were looking forward to filming this scene where they get to come to the door of the plane and stand really close to each other, each holding a gun, and shoot it and save everybody's lives. Like, oh, God.
Yeah,
but Tim Curry having to ask him to push him, please.
That was great.
Well, see, there are moments. I mean, there are moments like that that are pretty funny, or that are fun, I should say. Right. And
they're all so brief, right?
Balance out, yeah.
Yeah, and it needed, you know what it needed? It needed, well, Anaconda's the better movie of this style, of this ilk, and it came out 2 years later. But what this movie needed was an Ice Cube character, in my opinion. We didn't have a grumpy, pissy, you know. Urban dude. I want him in there yelling at everybody. That would have been great.
Mm-hmm. I guess what you're saying is this movie could have actually been funny rather than being unintentionally laughable.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. I mean, the clips you're going to hear today, you think you're listening to, some old Chevy Chase thing from the late 70s. Like, it's seriously like a comedy, these clips.
Really?
And it doesn't feel serious, even though they're lines that were delivered in a supposedly serious way. But it's like National Lampoon's Congo is what it sounds like.
Yeah. There's tons of scenes in this movie that you could set to Yakety Sax. And I don't understand why. Because the source material doesn't justify it.
Yeah. I got a chick in the bucket here for you. Do I have a thing for that? Probably that. I think Amy the ape was the chick in the bucket. Now, I know Amy's she was the there and kept showing up. Yeah, they're apes, right? Isn't gorilla an ape? Yeah.
Yes. Like going,
they're just not monkeys. Yeah.
They're not monkeys, right.
But there were monkeys in this movie.
Yes, there were. And
at least there were the sounds of monkeys in this movie, unfortunately. Yes,
they all thought they were Elvis Presley.
Yeah, the worst scene ever.
That was pretty bad.
Seriously, like, that's a scene you could put in any film sack movie and go, what was that doing there?
I agree. To me, so Amy, she would show up, but only when it was convenient to take a breath. Like, we're in this crazy river in a boat, and we're barely all crammed in here, and this is not good, and terrible things are happening. Where the hell is the ape right now? I don't know. Nobody knows.
But she's drugged. She's asleep.
Now we're on the shore, and here's the ape again with its little voice recognition thing.
It was the most convenient simian.
Yeah. Also, it was real smart about, you know, well beyond anything Siri can do today as far as knowing what a certain hand movement was. Because there would be times they're like, hey, now that hand's on the ground, what's it saying? Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Exactly.
Exactly.
No, how's it so fine-tuned?
Yeah. She's falling out of a plane. Potato, pineapple.
Exactly.
Yeah, I actually know a little ASL, and I was, like, confused. Like, I realized I needed to listen to what I was being told rather than stare at it.
But it was this weird thing they kept returning to, because it would be huge swaths of time where nobody would hear anything from the ape. And it was like the kind of scene where having an ape in it would have made the scene almost impossible. Yet they would go ahead and play the scene out and then, oh, yeah, there's Amy, like, walking up behind everybody. Don't worry, she's still here with us. I didn't like that at all, because the entire time I knew two things. One, that just seemed implausible and stupid. And two, eventually, this is going to come down to that Saturday afternoon lesson that the ape needs to be back with its natural habitat and in the freaking wild again. Yeah. They would have torn her apart and eaten her guts.
Yeah.
She was too domestic.
Stop talking.
Yes.
Baby, pretty monkey, pretty. Ah!
Make her shut up. I'm the Razorback or the Grayback or whatever. So that was all something. How about one of these tropes right here? We already talked about it, but the curly-haired, nebbish Jewish kid is going to die. Always going to die.
And it also, it started with the trope of, I know this guy at the very beginning of this movie ain't going to make it.
Yep.
Right. Remember? Yeah. Like, when it first started, did you see Bruce Campbell and go, oh, he's dead?
Yeah, I did. Well, I knew he wasn't. Trope. I knew because where his name was in the credits on IMDb, I thought, oh, this isn't going to go well. Because I got excited for a minute. This is young, good-looking Army of Darkness, you know, looking Bruce Campbell. And that was all going to go right to shite.
Was Joe Don Baker the trope of the overly angry police chief.
Yes, right.
Yeah, I would say
give
so.
Give me your badge and your gun.
Kind of. Yeah,
he was seemed like that.
He was supposed to be, according to the trivia, was supposed to be the who's the senator who ran for president. Oh, and he was he's in a ton of movies. Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Oh,
idea,
yeah.
Too.
Right. I know who you're
can't think of his name. Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson was supposed to be that role. He turned it down. He said he didn't like the script, so he got out. And if you're going to hire somebody to take his place, this is your guy.
Joe Don Baker won the Fred Thompson lookalike contest at the 1986 World Fair.
No doubt. I mean, for a minute at the top of the movie, I won't lie, I kind of thought it was him. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's that guy that ran for president. Oh, wait, no, that's Fred Thompson, different guy.
I have another chick in the bucket.
Ooh, I like chicks in the bucket. Hold on.
Ah!
Go.
It's the army guy that he tells to get out of the truck who just starts running. Go on, run.
Yeah.
Run. And he just runs.
He just runs.
He doesn't attract any attention. He doesn't say, hey, there's guys right there in that truck. They're escaping. Stop them.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep on running.
You know, that airport made me want to stop complaining about Phoenix International when I go there.
Yeah, that airport was like, it was like a war zone, and it was actually well depicted. Like, I actually got the sense of what they were trying to depict with that airport.
There's something about the wideness of the landing, you know, the whole cement everywhere. And there was something about all that. There was good space. I agree. That, in fact, everything up through the plane stuff kind of worked. Like, the flares thing is stupid, but it looked good. And and when that other car got blown up from a grenade or whatever on the runway, that looked good. And it seemed really harrowing. And Joey Pants contrasting all that by being sarcastic and, you know.
Okay, but then the movie ends with the stupidest air stuff ever, which is we'll make our escape on something we can't steer and has no power.
Let's hope we get blown somewhere safe instead of right into that volcano.
Yeah.
That's so dumb.
That was pretty dumb.
That was pretty bad.
A lot and of movies end with balloons. You notice that, though?
Right, but the funny thing is Michael Crichton, if he'd written that into the book that exact way, he would have explained it. He would have really explained it. He would have taken a moment to say, you know, there's a prevailing wind here that takes you right to Swaziland. And it's really, you know, like, but instead this movie just expects you to just, oh, Hollywood ending.
Yeah. There's a better chance of the guy who was told to run, Brian's trope. That guy, there's a better chance of him getting home than them in that damn thing.
Right.
I mean, that is just the truth. Yeah. So I'm going to ask, here's a little trivia. I'll ask Randy, since you and evoked something earlier, and we'll see if you can catch on to this. What do you think my single most hated moment in the movie was?
Ooh, that's tough.
It's come up on the show before. It's not an easy answer, so if you don't get it, I don't blame you. But it's the reason I'll give you a hint. Peter Jackson does this sometimes, and I freaking hate it when he does it.
Oh, the freeze, not freeze frame, but the choppy motion.
Oh, yes.
Slow motion video. Frame.
I hated that so much.
Oh, God, me too.
I hate it. We have regular slow motion, guys. It isn't a problem.
Yeah.
But go ahead and do it. We don't need 12 frame per second slow motion. We don't need, not even that, whatever that was. That was terrible.
It was really, really bad. And the thing is, like, my problem is it didn't add to the excitement at all.
No.
Nor was it like Monkey Vision. I was expecting this movie to go full Monkey Vision at some point, right?
But
like,
no, that was the intent. It has, right. You know, oh, yeah. This scene doesn't look very good. Just regular, regular 60 frames per second. Let's chop it up really bad.
Yeah. Like, remember Anaconda when you have Snake-O Vision and so on? Like, we have gray apes in this movie. They're evil. They murder for the joy of it. Like, you could have used this effect to a better use, but no.
Yeah. You know what? A gray ape is shortened to grapes, they're called. And if you live in Asia, they're called...
Grape.
They're called glapes.
Glapes.
So, yes, it was stupid, and I wish that wasn't in there, and it made me hate the movie more, because I don't like it when people do that. And I'm happy to report Peter Jackson seems to have dropped that for his Hobbit movies. He only did it with the three Lord of the Rings movies, but, man, does that take me out of his movies. King Kong as well, that had it in it. Just piss me off. It's like, you don't have to do this.
So
in fact, your same movie, like two scenes ago, had regular slow motion in it.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
What are you doing?
This movie is just full of stuff where it's like they were just experimenting. No, experiment didn't work. Let's leave it in anyway.
Yeah, why not? Mm-hmm. I got a bunch of clips if you guys want to hear them.
No, yeah. Of course we do.
Here's the worst.
But wait. Go ahead. We have to break into a cappella song before we do that.
Oh, you ready? A Beach right. Boy song, right? In a place
no,
which.
No, it was the Mamas and the Papas.
Oh, was it? What was the song?
California
All the
Dreamin'.
Leaves are brown. Yeah.
And I'm glad they cut it off before the lyric that everyone gets wrong.
Which is what? Which one?
Which is, I got down on my knees, and I pretend to pray. And everybody thinks it's I began to pray.
Oh, I thought it was began to pray too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the whole point is that he's going into a church to pretend to pray just so he can get out of the cold. And the preacher likes the cold because he knows that this guy's going to stay.
Oh, that changes the meaning completely.
It does, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, well, now let's talk about Wrapped Up Like a Douche.
That one actually is accurate. A lot of people think it's supposed to be Revved Up Like a Douche. No. The actual original lyric before Bruce Springsteen changed it was Wrapped Up Like a Douche.
Was it always Wrapped Up Like a Douche? I want it to be. Don't play with my emotions here.
I'm playing with your emotions.
Damn it. It's
Revved Up Like a Douche.
All right.
Like Bruce Springsteen ever cared whether you could understand a lyric.
I think he said Philadelphia. Did you hear that word? I think it was Philadelphia.
I remember when my dad would send me out with a quarter to go down to the convenience store and pick up a box of lyrics, and I'd drop them all over the place as I was coming back home.
And then I'd scooch them together and make a song out of it. Like this one.
Rudy, 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 Rudy.
All right, there's your Rudy. What a great password. Best password ever.
But
come on now, think about it.
Rudy, 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 Rudy.
This made me happy though. I was like, wouldn't it be awesome if we did have passwords like that? Because I'm always talking to I'm talking to Siri, and I'll have a friend, and there's a certain inflection that I want to put into my message I'm sending them, and Siri will totally misunderstand me. It'll be like use a totally different word, but I always say it with that weird inflection, like I'm like Rudy, Rudy, Rudy.
Well, and, I did some checking because.
Right.
I knew it couldn't just be straight up a stupid thing to do, right?
Right.
And I looked around, and there are references to Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. In fact, if you search for it on Google, it auto-completes with three Rudys. So I thought, oh, okay, these are...
Sorry, that's awesome.
There's something going on here.
But it's like it's a play on the... who was it? Clark Gable? The Judy, Judy, Judy.
Is that Gable? No, that's... I know who you mean.
Rock Hut? No,
it's one of those guys, though. He was in all the romantic comedies. I can't think of his name.
I'm Jimmy looking Stewart. It up now.
What is it?
No.
Who?
No.
Ned Not Beatty? No. Ned Beatty. What's wrong with me?
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant. That's it.
Yes.
Cary Grant. Yeah, and he'd say Rudy. So I thought that was it. But the only references I can find to this being chanted three times is the film Rudy, which came out in 2 years previous to this.
Wait, was it in the Cosby Show ever?
Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. That's the worst password.
But this is the perfect example of why this movie has so much stuff it doesn't need. Like there was nothing to them traipsing across this scientific facility and finally getting into that room, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why did we waste so much time on crap like that?
I don't know. It wasn't even a long movie. Man, it sure took them long enough to show even one gray monkey. Ape.
Gray monkey.
The gray monkey.
Ape monkey.
Here's Bruce Campbell yelling. It's a great yell, so enjoy it.
Very good.
What I love about that is literally him in a sound booth stopping the yell and them just using it with the stop in it.
Yeah.
Here it is.
That is awesome.
That is great.
Fantastic. Oh, and once again, the film sack scream montage just gets better.
Now, he produced The Sixth Sense. That wouldn't come until later. But back in the day when he made this movie, Frank Marshall, and directed it, he decided to get a little more specific, but with the same theme. So here's a moment you might recognize as Sixth Sense-like. But a little more specific.
I can see seven dead people.
I can see seven dead people. I don't just see dead people.
I remember that line, and I did not even think about that when that came up.
I love how convenient their technology was. Yeah. It was like it was all perfectly tuned to tell them what they needed to know, and nothing extra.
Yeah.
One most dead person. Two dead people.
Most annoying... technical thing they had in the movie to me was the fact that she made such a big fit about the monkey knocking over the stupid satellite dish receiver, and then like at the end of the movie she just runs up and throws it up. I'm like, well, why'd you make such a big drama deal?
Yeah,
if you can just fix it in 5 seconds.
She had to get yelled at by Fred Thompson lookalike to start getting a little rough and tumble there, I thought. Here is get angry. And so there's some good bad acting and angry acting, and this is them talking before she leaves. So this is the big boss and her. So here you go.
Once this is reported, they'll close the border. They have to.
What was that thing that destroyed the camera?
Baboon.
Well, I thought it was a gorilla, but I've never...
Gorillas didn't kill all those people. Gorillas don't do that.
Hold on. Can we back? Let me back.
Gorillas don't do that.
There's that thing in acting where they pause, and it's supposed to be him interrupting her, but they don't do it right. So listen to that again.
A baboon.
Well, I thought it was a gorilla, but I've never...
Gorillas didn't kill...
but I've never...
Oh, I hate that.
Well, those people. Gorillas don't do that. Could have been some locals. A rival company.
Please don't go off into one of your paranoid fantasies.
I need those diamonds, Dr. Ross!
Again, badly written is really. I don't like. They did the best they could with the acting, but I don't think they had a good script to start with.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Here's the creepy monkey man.
Good, that's good. Good girl, such a pretty girl. Yep, that's your lovey.
Your lovey.
And again, right. Like really, such a more interesting character in the book, not because of the it being a book, but because he is genuinely, he's in his relationship with this ape. He's been training and teaching and living with this ape for so long.
Yeah.
And he didn't ever get that across in this movie.
Once.
You never got the feeling like, no, this is like this guy's best friend or his child or whatever emotional attachment you need to get the character. And instead he's like, scientist on adventure and doesn't really, you know, like the ape relationship is secondary.
Yeah. Gave the ape a Mrs. Howell doll apparently there.
Lobby.
Here's one is a talking gorilla. So here's some of that.
This is a talking gorilla, Moira. This gorilla is talking.
I know.
That guy in the audience. See, it sounds like
another way.
It's National Lampoon's Congo, dude.
Right. Totally.
Let's see. Tim Curry and his terrible accent.
I will pay for Amy to go home.
And who are you, sir?
Herkema Homolka. Formerly of Romania, free now of the chains of Ceausescu.
He's really into it, dude. That's pretty bad.
So is there a correlation to Tim Curry's facial hair, whether or not he's going to be a good guy or a bad guy?
Absolutely. Oh,
like it's Home in Alone every movie. In New York or
even that Muppet
Rocky
Pirate
Horror
movie.
Picture Show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yep. It needs to be a chart.
His goatee is it's like a Kevin Bacon thing. You got to do some work. We got to do some tracking on that. Let's see. Oh, in 1995, only nerds had cell phones, apparently, because this little jibe came out.
So you're a geek with a cellular phone.
I'm a scientist.
Jeez.
Scientist.
Pretty soon you'll all have them. You don't know it yet. And they won't be huge and dumb. They'll be good and small and have touchscreens.
Just to repeat what you just said in a different way, geek with a cellular phone is so redundant.
Yeah. Or in other words. All right. Mm. That by the way, is stock
like
Hollywood.
That is
the Wilhelm of burps.
Right.
You nailed it. I couldn't think of how to describe this, but it's like thunder last week. We played the thunder clip, and it's just this stock Hollywood sound effect thing. That burp is used in everything. Just listen to it. That is so, it's in everything.
The Wilhelm Belch.
That's Revenge of the Nerds, Booger.
Yes.
Wilhelm Belch. That's it.
Belch.
All right, how about Ape Shouldn't Drink?
Are you serving that ape a martini?
That's stupid.
No, it's an apple teeny.
Yeah, it's a Cosmo.
It's Cosmo.
Banana teeny is what.
Right. Yes, and here's the smart thing. I'm doing it in a flimsy glass because that's that's how we would do it.
Yeah, great. Joey Pantoliano came in for a little while and was funny. And
I loved him. I missed him.
He's great. Yeah, he's great.
There more.
He just wants to taste the red steak again and doesn't care if it's real. So here he is saying one funny line right here.
Whatever. Be an asshole.
That was a good line. I love him. I could watch 1,000 movies with him.
I know. Replace him. Replace Dylan Walsh with him. And
No. Replace Tim Curry with him.
Oh, and just there you go.
He doesn't need to be from Romania.
Right.
Just a normal Italian-American dude would have been so fun.
Totally.
What is Joe Pantoliano? What's he doing now? You know he's got talent. Let's see.
Scott wants to know.
He's in 2015. He's still working good. All right.
Oh yeah.
But not a lot of things you've heard of, and that makes me sad. Like, hold on. I'm skipping down here. Percy Jackson is the most mainstream thing he's been in. Everything else is weird, like More Time with the Family, The Identical, Spring Break.
But I argue that you don't want him in things like The Avengers 2. You don't want him in Star Wars because he's Joey Pantoliano. And when you see him on screen, you think, Joey Pants!
Yeah.
You don't want to think, oh, that's the new Jedi Groff Blindu, whatever.
Groff Blindu. That's pretty good. That sounds exactly how he came up with
that's
names.
How George Lucas does it too. Yeah.
For the most part, though, I feel sorry for Joe Pantoliano because he was in, of course you remember he was in The Matrix, but I'm going to name three movies he was in: Memento, yep. The Fugitive, and yep. Bad Boys 2.
Great in all of them.
In every one of those, I'm pretty sure if you'd asked me 5 minutes ago who was in them, I would have said Joe Pesci or Danny DeVito.
Oh, like, you confused him with those guys. Yeah, it's possible.
I just don't remember Joe Pantoliano specifically.
He's maybe my favorite of those three you just mentioned, though. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm going to hire a weaselly little mobster man for my movie, I think he's my guy. I think he's who I go with. And look at him. Look at him. He's looking great.
Oh, he's precious. He's precious.
He's from Jersey. Come on.
That's so sweet.
How about this line here?
Monroe Kelly, I'm your great white hunter for this trip, though I happen to be black.
There was a couple of dumb black jokes in there about himself.
Right, exactly.
So bad. And that accent.
Monroe Kelly.
Hello.
See, I think that's it's very Jeffrey Holder. It's very African, like kind of the what you expect from, I don't know, the safari leader, the safari guide kind of guy, you know?
No, it's just James Bond. Play it again and imagine that he's referring to someone, he's talking to someone named Pussy Galore.
All seriously. Right, I'm closing my eyes. Here we go. All right. Here we go. Whoops. No, it didn't play. Why?
Monroe Kelly, I'm your great white hunter for this trip, though I happen to be black.
I think it's Ray. Ray, can I go this time? Ray? That's what I want. Here's another. Oh, here's some yelling, but it's got nothing to do with the guy back at home. So here you go.
This is pure Kafka.
Who's Kafka? Tell me.
Kafta.
Who's Kafka? Who is he?
That guy was great. All right, another good line.
Liar, liar, your pants on fire.
He's great. He's great. Here's his best line in the movie.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You need to actually play the clip where he says, eat the cake.
Eat the cake. That's true.
Stop eating the cake. Eat the cake.
Yeah, he was...
Stop eating my sesame cake.
All right. Unintentional line that made me laugh because it's just two words and it's brief and it's what's his name from Ghostbusters again. So here it is right here.
Video game?
That's it. Just video game.
Video game?
Video game?
Video game?
Question mark?
Yes. Video game?
I'm thinking you're coming out to the jungle and bringing a Game Boy.
Video game?
But it's like he's experiencing the script for the first time and just realized there's a question mark there.
What is that? Video game?
Here's... Wait.
Video game?
Yeah, that was at the end of it when she was the GPS unit. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Couldn't remember. All right, here's a freak out.
Watch out! God damn it! Not again!
That's exactly every line that Joe Don Baker, Brian Dunaway, just impersonated every line.
Good work.
Every time.
Diamonds are here. What?
No, no. The diamonds are here.
Oh, it's Curry again.
That was actually pretty good.
But you know what? He actually sounded like Christopher Lloyd there. He sounded like Doc Brown.
Yeah. No, no. The diamonds are here.
Yeah, like his role in Roger Rabbit or something. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. He played like another Armenian, I think. All right, here's my favorite line in the movie.
What are those holes?
Lava tubes.
Lava tubes.
Lava tubes.
Lava tubes.
What are those holes?
Lava tubes.
Lava tubes.
Dude. To the lava tubes.
I freaking love it. Okay.
Maybe at some point they gave up on the film and just started having fun with it.
Probably. They sure gave him funny stuff to say, like
video game.
Video game. All right, is the myth true?
So that's why Solomon's diamonds were never found. The myth of the killer ape is true.
It is true. Soviet Russia. All right, the more angry man. Oh, this is good stuff right here.
I have bad news, Charles. He was killed.
Did you get the diamond,
dude? I got a little scared.
Charles, he was killed. Can you just say Charles is dead? That's just, yeah. Listen to that again. Yeah. Listen to that again.
I have bad news. Charles, he's...
No.
He was killed.
He was killed.
To be followed up by...
Did you get the diamond?
Worst example of angry acting I think we've ever seen.
Probably.
It's pretty bad.
Or best example.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I don't know. I can't point to one that was bigger than that. That's the biggest we've had. So if this movie did anything
for us... And
right
after that, he had to go to the hospital for the aneurysm he had.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Probably had to poo. Thatcher Clips, and I enjoyed the hell out of that. That means... That's the sound of the Film Sack checklist. The coolest thing in your movie involves missiles and flare guns? Check. Got it. You never once think a person in an ape suit is real? Check. Nobody rocks a Hawaiian shirt like Joey Pants? Check.
It made me sad about Aloha shirts. Yeah. Like this whole movie, every time I saw anybody, because it wasn't just him in the whole, yeah. Okay, admittedly his was the most tropical.
Right.
But
like, this is what Americans do when they go to another country, is they put on that shirt as soon as they get there.
Every American in another country thinks they're Panama Jack.
Yeah. Trek stuff. We got some connections here. Kevin Grevio, I assume is how you say his name. It's got one of those X's in it. Roadblock officer in DS9. He was a regular background performer seasons 1 through 3. So, Ibit, you've probably seen these recently.
Probably.
Mostly Starfleet security. Once in a while as a Klingon. Jerry Goldsmith was the conductor. Wrote the music scores for 5 Star Trek movies and the main theme for TNG and Voyager. Did not write the theme for this movie, just conducted. It's an important distinction because I don't think it was very good.
Oh, I thought it was all right.
It was okay. Jay Caputo was a gorilla. He performed stunts in Star Trek Generations, DS9, and Voyager. And then finally, no, two more. Carolyn Seymour played Eleanor Romy. I don't know who that character is. Some other lady in this movie. Who else was there? I don't know who that is.
Maybe... some in the audience or something.
Maybe.
Gosh, I don't know, because this is one of the great tropes of this movie, is there can be only one woman.
Right. Yeah. She's it, I think. Maybe you're right. The audience, ladies, could have been it. Yeah. Anyway, in TNG, three different times, three different people, and then finally in Voyager, she played somebody named Cal Thexis. And then finally, I had to burp like a monkey. Alexander Courage was an orchestrator. He, in TOS, wrote several musical scores, among them the main title theme. Now, what's interesting about that is originally, this is told to me by Daryl, the Trek nerd, that Roddenberry wanted Jerry Goldsmith to make the original, that whole thing, and he didn't have time, had other projects, so he hired his friend, who he recommended, who was Alexander Courage, who did the theme. But then Goldsmith went on to do all that other stuff. It's just weird that in 95, Goldsmith and Courage are working together on this thing, which is,
that is interesting.
A big shitty movie, but whatever. Soundtrack, great. I'd give it a U for unremarkable. You liked it better.
I did. I enjoyed the score very much.
But did you like it when the monkey really time was on and it would all go Congos and like freaking Lion King on us?
No. Early on, I actually checked early in the movie to see that I was getting the sound for the right movie. Like I stopped Netflix. And right. Like, is
it's
Netflix
true because
playing?
Each location had very specific sound in the opening scenes.
Yeah. It's like a video game. Walk into the room.
Yeah. But then
we've got lasers. Like
that scene with the Balinese monkey chant was just—it was so over the top. It was
Balinese
way
monkey
too
chant.
Far. You know what I mean? Like way too far. Way more. What are all these natives doing here singing this thing?
It's pretty weird. Well, I'll tell you what's weird is not letting you guys do Twitter posts. So we're not going to do that. We're going to do the right thing and let you do it. So let's start with Randy. Randy, what's your Twitter post?
What's this movie called? Congo. Poor man Steve Guttenberg and poor man's everyone else go to Africa and blow up a mountain. But first, they stay up all night listening to monkeys fucking.
Whoa! Bleep you!
Bleep you!
Bleep you!
Bleep you! That's all I'm bleeping I'm doing right there.
Did they blow the volcano up? I thought it just kind of did it on its own.
It just did it on its own.
Did they like
one
tie up
Eric laser fire?
He shot the lava tube!
Well, and all those gray monkeys are pretty flammable. If you want
they
the
are,
truth
man.
Of it. Brian Dunaway, what do you say?
Congo made me feel like I could use a Ghost Tribe flash mob to see what level of dead I was. Hint, it was a punch to the Tim Curry kidney dead.
Oh.
That's right. Yeah, that whack in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a,
That was so stupid. Gosh dang it. Why'd you have to remind me of that? At least that finality. The fatality. At least that whole scene kind of had some fun things going on, but I forgot how dumb it was how he got commandeered by monkeys. That looked real stupid.
That was fun.
Trip to the back. It was. Yep. Didn't we just see the ninja movie? Did we have to see it again? All right. Finally, Brian Ebert.
Congo, paying tribute to the late, great Michael Crichton by sending Amy back to the jungle with a cocktail shaker and a pack of Lucky Strikes. Where's Andy Serkis when you need him?
Yes. Nice. Wow.
That's smoking.
That's such truth. I never thought about that. Andy Serkis.
Yeah. That's great. He would have been
Doing stuff back then. I mean, he was doing stuff and, you know.
Was he?
His earliest thing was 1989, so.
Oh, all right.
But I think he was doing actual acting roles.
He hadn't discovered his one singular role for the rest of his life.
He's really good as
walking on my hands.
Who's the one? Yeah. What do you do? What do you do for a living? Walk on my hands. That actually, he's really good in that 13 going on 30 movie, which is total rom-com garbage. But
I like that movie.
He plays a boss. Yeah, it's good. And it's got Hulk in it, and he's great in it. Mm-hmm. I got a man crush on him. I can't get enough of what's his name again? Mark Ruffalo. I just freaking love him.
Man crush on Andy Serkis. Then we'd have to question.
But he played the editor of the magazine, the lady magazine. He was fantastic in that role. So
the lady magazine. Yeah. That's funny.
But he was really good as Caesar in the Planet of the Apes deal. He was the body capture man for that and for the new one coming out. Oh yeah, Andy Serkis. Yeah, heck yeah.
I'm stoked about the new one.
I am too. There is great things in that movie. Now most of it involved not people in it, but when the monkeys were doing their thing, that was awesome.
Caesar.
So good. And then people came on screen again and ruined it. But later, or the new one that's coming out, it's got your Walter White in there. You got your
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. That looks great. I'm excited.
Can't wait.
That's got Serkis.
He's in. Is he in King Kong or not? Godzilla as well.
He was. Oh, Serkis?
No. Walter White.
Is he? No. Yes. You know what? I've got it backwards. You're right. It's Godzilla. I saw him in the trailer.
Okay, I want to see Godzilla as well, though.
Now I'm bugged that I don't remember who. Oh, you know who it is? It's Sirius Black.
Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman's in it. Cool. That's who it is. Which is cool too. I'll watch him.
Sure.
Do you remember him under all that makeup in Hannibal? I just watched that last week. I forgot how creepy cool that makeup is on. If you guys don't remember, there's a guy who's bedridden because Hannibal Lecter got him drunk one night and made him slice himself up with a piece of glass. And then the whole movie is trying to get revenge, and he's super rich and lives in this giant house. And Gary Oldman is freaking freaky. And it's not even that good of a movie. It's kind of terrible. Oh,
but they just poured prosthetic junk all over his face.
Yeah, it looks good though. And the way his eyes don't work, it's really
good. They poured it real good.
It holds up. That's all I'm saying. Not quite like what's his name's head when he was getting his brain eaten. Anyway.
No, that was so weird.
Yeah, it was really
I don't know
weird.
If I agree with you.
What, that it holds up?
I love this reality show Face Off. Mm. And when I think about the Gary Oldman and Hannibal, I think, they could have done better.
You think so? It's really good. Are you sure you remember this? Because I think it looks, here, I'm going to.
No. I remember. I'm just saying, nowadays, I think they do better.
I'm going to send an image to you guys right now, and you're going to go, that's not bad. And then you're going to.
Well, it definitely doesn't look like Gary Oldman. It looks like somebody whose face has been acidified and.
Yeah.
Acidified.
Acidified. Your face has been acidified.
Actually, that's not too far from the truth. I just put that. Wow. Yeah. I think it's really intense. I think it holds up. But anyway, there's that.
Oh, that's creepy, yeah.
There's a lot of things about that movie that don't, but that's not bad. Okay. Alternate title. Just hand it to me. Right here. Look, I'm doing Foley work now. It's right here. Mm-hmm. ATBA means all the bad accents, or, quote, nobody put Bruce Campbell in a bucket.
Oh,
I know.
Poor Bruce Campbell.
That was a terrible role for him. We got an email here from Fukushima, Japan.
Really?
Yeah. Pete wrote in. He's a expat over there doing stuff. He's originally from Northern Ireland, actually, so he's an Irish expatriate. It says, today, March 11th, is a big day for me. So this is a little while ago. It's the third anniversary of the earthquake in Japan. In the immediate aftermath, I looked for podcasts on iTunes to take my mind off things. I found Film Sack and therefore Frog Pants. It's always a gateway drug.
Yeah.
Ever since then, I have either listened to a Film Sack episode or watched a film for Film Sack on March 11th. this year is special. The very first episode I listened to was the one about Commando. So this year I saved The Last Stand, another Arnie movie, obviously. I'm watching it and then listening to Film Sack episode for it. Thank you for all you do. It means more to me than I can express. Pete, which is kind of awesome that he would use that Film Sack as a way to kind of commemorate surviving that terrible thing. That was a mess, you know, that, and they're still recovering from that on that particular part of the island. So, thoughts are with Pete and all those affected by that thing, but I'm really glad to hear that Film Sack adds a little something to you over there. That's great.
Film Sack. It adds a little something.
Adds a little something to you. next week, we are doing a live commentary track for Expendables 2. You guys have been asking for more of these, so it's time to kick one up a notch and do it. We're going to watch it together, and that means you guys can put it in your earbuds, turn the movie down a little bit, and watch it while you listen to us.
So we did Expendables on Film Sack.
Yeah, we did.
And now we're going to do a commentary. All right.
For Expendables 2, yeah.
For Expendables, okay, all right.
Yeah, and this one's got your, it's got your, who's in it?
All the action stars.
Van
Damme. Right, this one had the Van Damme.
Schwarzenegger.
Chuck Norris is in it. Chuck Norris. We just saw him last week.
Yeah, we did, in the Octagon, which was apparently a building he was in a lot. So yeah, watch for that. That's next week, Expendables 2. Be there with us. Enjoy it.
And I just want to say, sorry about the F-bombs.
Oh, no, I enjoyed it. They really added some spice to our PG rating. Mm. Actually, you know what? It's still PG-13, I think. I think we're still under the limit, aren't we?
Right. Well, yeah. Can you drop an F-bomb in PG-13?
You can.
You can drop the one.
You can drop, is it one or two?
Yeah, but you drop two.
I like the one. Two. You just can't drop Jet Li's the one.
Oh, great. Nobody drops Jet Li in the corner. Something like that. Hey, that's it. We're done. We're out of here. Thank you guys for being here. And if you'd like to contribute your own email to the proceedings, you can surely do that. The email address is filmsack@gmail.com. If you'd like to visit us on the web and find our show notes and archives and all that good stuff, filmsack.com is the place. You can also leave comments on the blog. We respond to those. We like those conversations. Even if you think we suck or have a burning disagreement with something we said, that's fine. Filmsack.com is the place. Super easy. Just go post. We're on Twitter @FilmSack. Leave us a review on iTunes and wherever podcasts are downloaded. We'd appreciate that. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Scott. Danny.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.